You train a puppy with love, kids even more so. Mike tells stories about spending time with his little ones, hunting, fishing, and laughing.
For instance, if you wanted to train your dog to bring the newspaper in and lay it beside your chair rather than chew it up, what you don't do is you don't beat on your dog. You take that little puppy out with you when you go to get the newspaper. You lead him out there to where the newspaper is. You let him smell of it, and he'll start to bite it. That's natural for a young puppy, right? And when he starts to bite, you just pull it out of his mouth. Pick the newspaper up, lead him back inside, lay the paper down beside the chair, let him smell of it, pull him back away from it, sit down in your chair, read your newspaper, pat your dog. Your dog feels real good. He's being trained, but he doesn't know that. But he feels real good. He's had a good day. Now, the next day you do the same thing. You do that for about 3 or 4 weeks or a month or something, and that dog will stop chewing on that paper. He knows he's pulled away every time he chews on that paper. He stopped chewing on the paper. He'll smell of it. And then you go out when he gets almost grown, you know, and you pick that paper up, you stick it in his mouth. And you lead him inside. And you bring him to where you want him to lay it down. You push his head down. You take it out of his mouth, and you pat him real good, and you compliment him. You do that for a couple weeks. And you know, the day comes, you open the front door and you turn that dog loose. He runs out, he grabs that paper, he brings it in, he lays down, he wags his tail. You like me? Oh, you're a fine dog. You're a smart dog. How'd you train your dog? Like I said to the fellow one time, you know, we were sitting at the dinner table, and he had this little pup. Now, I was about 18 years old, and we were eating steak, and he cut off a little piece of steak, and he laid it there on the floor. And his dog went up and smelled of it and then sat down there like that. Just sat there, wagged his tail. And I said, "What's wrong? Dog sick?" He said, "No." He said, "He won't eat it till I tell him to." I said, "No, you're kidding me." I had a whole bunch of old hound dogs, you know, and I had several of them eat the saucer. I mean, you take something out to eat, you had to dump it out or eat the plate. And just, whoop, whoop, it's gone. And so I couldn't understand a dog that wouldn't eat meat. And so he makes this little sound with his cheek, just a little something like that, you know. And that dog sucked that thing up. And I thought, well, that's some kind of trick. So I laid a piece of meat down there, and dog wouldn't touch it. And so I said, still wouldn't touch it. I wasn't his daddy. Wouldn't follow me. Wouldn't obey me. He knew his daddy's voice, and his daddy's voice he follows. Wouldn't do anything. I said, "Eat it. I eat that meat." He wouldn't do it. I was going to kick that dog. Stupid dog wouldn't do anything I'd tell him to do. The man said, "Dog ate the meat." I said to him, "How did you train that dog to do that?" He said, "You just got to be smarter than the dog." Okay. So I shut up. But when it came time to raise kids a little later on, I began to reflect back on that. He didn't spank on that dog or beat on that dog or wait until the dog jumped up in the kitchen table and starts, you know, eating everything up, and then knock him off the table against the wall and say, "You don't do that in my house, dog. Let me tell you something. One more time like that, and you're going to get it." Next day, dog, "Didn't I tell you one more time? Now I'm not going to tell you again." Next day, come in, dog's up the middle of the table. Knock him off the other direction. "This is the last time I'm going to tell you. See this stick? I'm going to take this to you. One more time, and you're going to get this stick." Comes in the next day, dog's up on the table. He right across the back. Dog, falls off on the floor, begins to kick around like it, about half paralyzed, you know. Mother comes in and says, "What are you doing to my dog?" He said, "Well, he's up in the middle of my table. Don't you teach this dog anything while I'm at work?" She says, "Well, he's your dog too." He said, "Yeah, but I'm going fishing." "Now, what's wrong?" He said, "Well, I trained my dog right. I don't know what's wrong with him. I whipped him just like your book said." I had a lady write me the other day, most pitiful thing in the world. They had a kid that was 3 or 4 months old. This man writing me what it was. The man was beating on his kid because the kid would cry and wake up. Crazy, man. You don't train up a kid by waiting for them to do something wrong and then tying into them and spanking them so that it hurts so much they won't do it again. You got to train them. Before I had any children, I didn't get married till I was 25, and I couldn't find anybody that wanted to live my lifestyle. I started preaching when I was young and traveled a lot and I did a lot of different things. But anyway, I finally found my wife here, and she found me. She proposed to me. We got married when I was about 25 or 26, I believe. And it was about 3 years before we could have any kids. Finally read a book and learned how. Anyway, that's another subject. I'll write on that someday. I've learned a lot. Anyway, I decided real early in life that the most important thing in the world to me was going to be my family. I decided that before I got married. And Deb and I had about 3 years to talk about it, you know, and look it over and talk about what we were going to do and how we were going to raise our kids. Well, we came up with the idea. I said, you know, I'm not going to send my kids to school. She said, not going to send them to school. They'll be idiots. I said, no, we're going to teach them at home. I don't know anything about teaching them. I said, I don't either, but that's what we're going to do. And this was way back before there was such a thing as homeschooling. I mean, the word wasn't created. They didn't make literature for it. There was no homeschool support programs. There was nothing going on at all. It was unheard of. And it was like saying, I'm going to not shave anymore. I mean, it was way back there, you know. And so we decided we were going to homeschool. And then I said, you know, what I read, I don't believe we're going to have our kids in the hospital. Let's just have them at home. Have them at home! You see why I couldn't get anybody to marry me? And we decided on certain things we were going to do in life that were going to be different. I said, we're not going to eat any white bread anymore. We're going to quit eating that colonial bread Bill's body 8 ways, you know. 7 of them are constipation. I said, we're not going to have any of that in our house, you know. And we had certain things we decided we were going to do. So when we had our first kid, I said, look, I said, she's yours until she can follow me around outside, and then she's mine, all right? She said, all right. So we were really excited about our first kid, you know. And by the way, we didn't have those books yet that told us about how to nurse in certain proportions and order and how to even have babies and all that. And so our baby slept with us and nursed her whenever she wanted to. And Deb towed her around and did just fine. Didn't need anybody to help us out on that. And then I didn't wait until she got big enough to walk. I remember one time I got ready to go rabbit hunting. I had this double sawed-off Ithaca 12-gauge I rabbit hunted with. I tell you, I'm bad on the cottontails. And swamp rabbits, too. And I had that double-barrel shotgun I'd go hunting with. I'd shoot from the hip, man. Boom, boom, 2 of them like that. So I said, I'm going to take Rebecca. She wants to go rabbit hunting with me. She said, how do you know? I said, well, she told me she did. What did she say? She said, bleh, bleh. And I said, all right. So I got a backpack, and I stuck her in this little frame backpack like this. I don't know how old she was, but she wasn't talking yet. So I took her rabbit hunting. I explained to her what we were going to do, and you know, I could see she was excited about it. And so I went out, and I was stomping through the honeysuckle like this, and sure enough, after about a half hour, jumped up a rabbit, and I, boom, and missed him. And it's unusual, very unusual. So I reloaded, went back, another jump, boom, I got him, but he wounded, he was limping a little bit, and ran over where he was, and about that time, another one jumped up. Boom! I got that one. 2 of them down. And I ran over and I had to go over this barbed wire fence and I climbed over it and I stomped through this honeysuckle and I picked up the one rabbit. I picked up the other rabbit. I said, look, Rebecca, we got 2 rabbits. Nothing, just absolutely silent. I said, 2 rabbits, look. So I grabbed the frame, pulled her in there. She was sound asleep. Like it. Slept through 3 shots and jumping over all these fences like that, you know. So that's the way you teach us. We never had any trouble with her sleeping after that. I mean, just take them out and rabbit hunt with them when they're real sleepy. And they'll go to sleep under any circumstance after that. My playmates were my kids. They were my friends. I didn't have other close friends. My kids were my close friends and my wife. I didn't have other hobbies and pastimes. I used to like to go fishing by myself in this swamp. Now, it was a Mississippi River run where the water would rise up in the spring and fill up, and when it'd go down, it'd leave a lake, and it was trapped back there and has a bunch of cypress trees. Some of you kind of close to that, you know what I'm talking about. And I would go in there and have to wade in water about waist deep because it's just full of snakes and all kinds of good fish. A bass every other cast. I mean, it's a fantastic place, you know. It's a fisherman's paradise. And I'd go down there and fish. Well, my boys came along, and they were about, 2 and 3, and I started taking them fishing with me. And so we was down there one day, and I left them on one side of the lake, and I was on the other side. I had to kind of swim across to fish on the other side. And I was over fishing, and I heard them hollering, "Woo! Look at whoa, boom, boom, oh, get hit me!" I looked up, one of them had a cotton mouth about 8 feet long, like this, holding that thing up. And they said, "Look what we got, Daddy, cotton mouth." I said, "Boys, make sure it's dead." And so they said, well, we beat its head plumb off. Said, it's plumb beat off. I said, all right, what do you want to do? They said, we want the skin. I said, okay, skin it out, boys. And I was on the other side about 200 feet away fishing. And so I saw them there on the bank, and they laid that old skin out like that. Now, you have to understand, to fish where we were, lots of mosquitoes. So you had to wear camouflage mosquito nets we'd put on us like this. And to keep the mosquitoes from stinging through them, my wife made these for us. You create these ripples on them, kind of like pleated material that lets it stand out, and then put some threads or strings of cloth hanging down. It kind of brushes the mosquitoes off. Well, it kind of looked like a big rag pile. You know what I'm talking about? And the boys, they all had them too. Well, then the mosquitoes would bite you on the face, and we didn't believe in that poison stuff that you spray on you to get rid of mosquitoes. And so we would take mud and smear it on us like this, you know, that old swamp mud, and put it on the back of your hands, and that keep, and put it in your ears too, like this, and that keep the mosquitoes out of your ears. And so here's these two little guys. I don't remember how old they were, maybe 4 and 6 or something, and they were bending over skinning that snake out, man. I mean, they look bad, you know what I mean? They're skinning that snake out. And you know what happens when you cut into a snake's nerves, don't you? I mean, it just starts cutting all up and acting up. Well, they didn't know that yet. And I waited. Sure enough, they hit the nerve. When they did, I saw both of them running backwards through a briar patch screaming, ah! just digging back like that, getting out of the way. So we were coming out of there that day, you know. And we had to walk about 1.5 miles across the swamp and then come up this steep bank. And when you walked up, you're in a state park right on this blacktop road. And there was lots of city folks. They'd come out there and have little picnics, you know, and experience some nature right there where they'd mowed the lawn and had a little lake and a little picnic table and a little place like that to put your charcoal and whatnot. And so we'd been down in the bottom here. You have to carry your fish out in a sack. And then we got canteens on us, and we got machetes, and we got knives, and Tommy Hawks, and whatnot. And we got this mud all over us keeping mosquitoes out. So here the three of us come, and I looked out and I saw about 8 or 10 of them standing in the road in a big circle, about 20-foot circle, and one of them was holding this stick kind of like he was pronouncing a spell on the snake right there in the middle. And it was just one of these big old black water snakes. The boys had already picked up 50 apiece. I mean, they knew they weren't poisonous, and I told them how to catch them without them biting them. And if they bit you, just make a sore, but it wasn't poisonous. And so I looked at that snake, and I saw him. I said, Gabe, I said, when we get out on the road there, pick that snake up. Okay, Daddy. So we come climbing out of the brush there, part the brush like that, step out on the road, Mom says, and I walked right through the middle of them like I didn't even know they were there, and walked right over the snake, you know, like I didn't know it was there. And two or three of them were screaming, oh, it's a snake, look out, it'll bite you. Oh, careful, oh, it's a snake. I just walked right past it like I didn't even see the snake, you know. And Gabriel comes right along behind me. There's two of them, little ones, just like the big ones. And Gable reached down and grabs that snake up by the tail, picks up, and he couldn't even get the head off the ground. It was so tall, you know. He says, oh, Daddy, that's a big one. And they were just, oh. I said, oh, leave that snake alone, boy, and come on. And just kept on walking like that, you know. So, and like I was totally indifferent. So he drops the snake, and Nathan's walking along behind, kind of dragging the fish like this. And we get down the road, totally silent behind me. It's like they all just dropped dead. I couldn't hear a thing. We get down the road about far from here at the back of the building, and I'm dying to see what they're doing, you know. But I don't act like I care. And it's all part of this fun. So I pretend I'm slapping a mosquito on my shoulder. I go like that and look around, and they're all standing in the road going. Just goggle at it. So we get around the corner, you know, and we just die laughing. I mean, we're slapping each other, and we're laughing, and the mud's falling all of us, and we left a little pile of mud there. And we're laughing. We get in the pickup truck, you know, and we're driving home. We're laughing about it. Of course, the other kids were at school and kindergarten while all this is going on. You understand? Other kids that were daycare, and my boys were out there with me fishing. So we get down to the country store, and we stop there, and we buy some RC and a moon pie. We sit down out front, and so everybody comes in there. We stop, and we tell them the story about those funny city slickers. And, of course, they all get a laugh. We go home. We tell everybody about it. Now, when I get home with my boys, they're, say, 4 and 6 years old, and we've had a good time like that, and I say to the boys, boys, carry the garbage out. Do you think they say, oh, Daddy, I don't want to? They love to please me. We're buddies. We're friends. When I say, boys, it's time to do a little schooling now. Sit down here and let's discuss this thing. Let's talk about this. Sit down here and let's figure this out. Okay, don't want to, but they will. They'll sit down and do it. Why? Because they're buddies. My boys never threw fits, never, ever, not one, and told me they weren't going to do something. They never sat down and squalled or begged and had little spells. They were always obedient. Why? Because I developed a relationship with those boys in moments like that and other things that we did. For instance, my boys, well, girls too, but they were my playthings. I enjoyed making them men. It was just fun to make them men and show them off too. And so when they're out there riding their wagon down the hill, I say, boys, you know what you need to do now. When I was your age, or maybe a couple years younger, I'd have me a little ramp to jump off of where I'd make that thing go up in the air. Now, how you do that? I said, well, you can take a couple concrete blocks here, and then you take a piece of plywood, and you lay that on there like that, and pack a little dirt around there so it won't skip on you. And you just come around and you hit that thing real square, and you get airborne. You go over the top of it. And I said, now, it's liable to wreck, so you need to be careful. Well, of course, you know they're going to wreck the first two or three times. They're going to get some knots on their heads, but they're going to love it. And so I'd stay out there, and I'd just die laughing, just stand there and just laugh every time they have a wreck. And when they'd make a good jump, I'd brag them. I'd go and say, Mama, come on here. I want you to see what these boys are doing. She'd come out and watch what they're doing. When Grandma would come over, I'd say, Grandma, the boys are doing school. They're having a good time. Don't ride the wagon, kids. Anyway, this little pond, about half the size of this room, real close to the house. And every one of my kids were swimming by the time they were 3.5 or 4 years old. I'd take them down there when they're just little bitty tots, and I'd put them in the water, and I'd play with them, and they'd learn to swim and kick and paddle and what all. And we'd have what we call gook fights. Now, you've got to have an old Tennessee or Alabama pond that's got brown water in it to have a gook fight. Because the gook grows in the shallow water, and it gets thick and it's stringy like that, and it grows on top. And as the summer goes on, it gets thicker and thicker until you can pick up a big handful of it like this, and it's like spinach sort of. And about the same taste. And you get it together, and you get a big handful of it, and you wait till your opponent comes up out of the water washing like this and can't see good, and you haul off and hit him right square between the eyes with it like that. And that goop just wraps around him and goes over his ears like this, and it's a horrible feeling experience if you're hit, but it's great if you're doing the hitting. And so we'd go out, and the girls too. The girls have these gook fights, and of course they'd all gang up on me. I was one side, they were the other side. And they would jump out of the water, and they'd run around the bank and grab a handful of gook, and they'd get a bunch of gook balls like this, you know. And they'd come running up, and they'd just laugh, one day, whoop, and I'd go into the water, and I'd come up, and there would be one of them behind me, and they'd hit me like that, and I'd hit them, and they'd go swimming off real fast. And then they'd get on the diving board, and they'd run, and they'd throw one at me this way, and we'd have these gook fights. Several times after that, I'd be preaching, feel something kind of stiff, you know, in the back of my neck. I'm here, and peel off a long string. That stuff, it wouldn't hardly come off in the shower, you know. Just stick with you like it, get around your ear, and you peel it off like that. Or my wife say, hold up a minute. And go inside my ear and get some of that green gook out, you know. Now, when you're having a good time with your kids like that, listen, when it comes time to tell them what to do, you can tell them in a plain voice without anger. Then they do it. But if you ignore them like you do your dog, just wait till they get on the table and then kick them off, you're going to have problems. And you won't be able to beat them enough to keep them from doing that. Because once you train that dog to get on that table and eat that food, and then you start beating on him, he's going to snap at you for beating on him. But he's still going to get on the table and eat that food. And you can beat on him again, he'll still eat that food. Why? Because you trained him to. Now, you could break the dog from that habit, but what you'd have to do is spend some time with him. Get him to where he wasn't shy of you when you lifted your hand. Get him where he didn't do like that, you know, and think he's fishing to get hit every time. And get him to where you spoke positive words to him. And then take him to a table that had food on it. And say to the dog, no. Mealy jumps up in the chair because he's used to eating this food. As he starts to get on the table, you pull him back down, put him down, and say no. The dog jumps up in the chair again, you pull him down and say no. Then you sit down and you eat. Take yourself a little switch of some sort, and when the dog starts to jump up, reach out and hit him on the end of the nose with it. Hit him right between the eyes with it or something. Just a piece of newspaper. It won't, not creating great pain, but the shock of it is getting his attention, reinforcing your word, no. And when he starts to get on the table again, whack him right between the eyes with that thing. Say no in a normal voice. Bring him in every day for a week while you eat. And when he starts to get on the table, say no. I've got a cat that comes in the house and will not get on the table. That cat will be starving, but it will not get on the kitchen table to eat. You can still see the imprint on the wall, shaped just like a cat. No. All I do, it's the first few times he tried, don't believe everything I say, all right? Sometimes my mouth just runs away with me, just like a woman or something. First, that's a joke, don't believe that either. First few times he tries to get on the table, I just push him off, like that, push him off. And if he never gets started, then you don't have the habit to break. But once they get started, you can still break the habit, but it takes repeated experiences of turning them away and saying no and gaining their confidence and their respect that you're consistent. Now, if you go consistent for 2 weeks, keeping that cat off the table, and then one day you let him up there and you let him eat, then it's going to take 4 weeks to break him the next time. And then if you let him up after 4 weeks, you've convinced that cat, just keep trying. Eventually, you can find the loophole. Consistency is absolutely important.
As always, we hope you are blessed by what you've heard today. And again, remember to check out our great weekly online specials.